Our next speaker will be Dr. Maya Rockamore. Dr. Rockamore is the Director of Leadership for Healthy Communities and Global Policy Solutions, a Washington, D.C.-based strategic social change firm. Her area of expertise includes health, social insurance, income security, education, women's issues, and youth civic participation. Dr. Rockamore is the author of the Political Action Handbook, a how-to guide for the hip-hop generation, and co-author and editor of Strengthening Community, Social Insurance in a Diverse America. I am pleased to present to you Dr. Rockamore.
Good afternoon. So I direct Leadership for Healthy Communities. It's a national program of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation that's focused on working with state and local elected and appointed officials in an effort to advance childhood obesity prevention policies, so healthy eating, active living policies. Our model is actually to work through associations of policymakers, so organizations like the U.S. Conference of Mayors, the National League of Cities, the National School Boards Association, the American Association of School Administrators. So over the course of our program, we've worked with over 15 of these associations, and they receive a grant, and they in turn structure interventions with their policymakers that educate them about healthy eating and active living policies, but also help to mobilize them around advancing policies that support healthier kids and healthier communities. That being said, today I'm talking more broadly about policy. And I have nothing to disclose. But with that, I want to give us a sense of where we are in terms of this movement around childhood obesity prevention. As you can see from this slide, we are still, and it seems like, you know, we're making a lot of progress, but we're still on the climb in terms of the front end of the obesity epidemic. Now, you may have heard this last week that we're seeing a lot of progress in certain areas where policy interventions have been made early. But in terms of the nation and where we are in this obesity epidemic, we're still on the upswing. Now, you all know that the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, of course, has a goal of reversing the childhood obesity epidemic by the year 2015. And so there's a lot of concern about whether that goal will be met, but we are encouraged by some early indicators in key cities across the U.S. As you also know, there's a lot of concern as a nation about our health care expenditures overall. And so the projections for annual obesity-related direct health spending in the U.S. Are actually very startling over the next 20 years or so. We see that the blue line are the total predicted costs. The yellow line is if we actually reduce BMI by only 1%. And the red line is if we reduce BMI in this country by 5%. And, of course, these cost estimates are a driving concern for policymakers at the federal level, at the state level, and at the local level. Because, as you well know, you know, budgetary concerns are a priority across the board. So if nothing changes, and this is from the recent Effort and Fat, if nothing changes with regards to our trajectory, we have now moved from those red numbers, the red maps that you saw from the CDC, we're all familiar with them. We're now moving into blue and black. And so if nothing changes, we're getting literally into the black, with Mississippi and Oklahoma being the states that are the lead indicators. If nothing changes by the year 2030, this is where we'll be. If we're reduced by 5%, it'll be lighter blue. But the overall policy environment is encouraging because we are seeing, I think, a greater focus in the popular media. I think that certainly the First Ladies, as I'll tell people, we've been doing this since 2006, and I think that we were kind of going along like this, you know, a little uptick. And then First Lady Michelle Obama said that this is her priority issue, and then we saw, I think, a steeper level of interest across the nation. It finally reached the national agenda and the spotlight. She placed a spotlight on this, and I think that we saw more engagement by policymakers across the country at every level of government, not just the federal level. But the fact that the news media is focusing on this issue is also very encouraging. And so, we did see at the federal level, we saw several years ago the passage of the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, which was very encouraging. But we've got some other federal legislation that is coming up or has passed this year that's incredibly important for healthy eating and active living. The Farm Bill is one, the Transportation Bill is another, and the Elementary and Secondary and Education Act is another one where there are opportunities. Now, ESEA, otherwise known as No Child Left Behind, actually expired in 2007, but there's been so much contention around the policy that the reauthorization hasn't moved forward. And so we expect that this next Congress, there will be movement on ESEA. But, you know, the opportunities for moving health policy within ESEA have not actually been a priority, interestingly enough, even for the Obama administration, because we have silos within education policy where people tend to think of, you know, the brain as separate from the body, and the folks who are focused on academic achievement have been, you know, like really resistant to the notion of the whole child. Yet, at the same time, it's still a policy lover and one that public health advocates should center in their considerations. The Farm Bill expired on September 30th, and the Senate moved on passage. The House Agricultural Committee also moved on passage, but the House overall has not, and they're waiting until the new Congress. And on the Transportation Bill, it has been extended. There were a lot of fights over things like transportation enhancements, the school, what is it that's locked? So what is the school? Safe Route to School. Yes, Safe Route to School was under threat several times. If anybody knows Deb Hudson, she was all over the place doing a lot to try to save that. And so that has been extended for just 2 years. So in terms of the Farm Bill, this is incredibly important for the nation's health. And the reason why, by the way, I'm talking about federal policy is because federal policy doesn't just happen at the federal level. It actually happens in states and localities across the country. And so when you're talking about what's happening in communities on nutrition or physical activity or what's happening in communities, you actually have to also understand the federal drivers of that. And so the Farm Bill, most of the bill, if you look at that graph, is focused on food stamps and nutrition programs. So this is our nation's food policy bill, and we take it seriously enough to focus on treating it as such. It includes things like EBT at farmers markets, and that's one of the priorities in this round. People are looking at how do we actually strengthen supports for them at farmers markets across the country. Strengthening SNAP, looking at actually institutionalizing the Healthy Food Financing Initiative at the federal level within a federally reauthorized bill. Incentivizing crop diversification. So as you well know, we tend to subsidize wheat and corn, but you know the specialty crops like fruits and vegetables don't get that support, so looking at how we actually reverse that. And then investing in locally grown food has been an initiative in this particular iteration of the Farm Bill. And so there are other things that are going on at the federal level, including the drafting of standards for competitive foods served outside of the school lunch program, FTC looking at food marketing practices. And then, you know, there's a lot of concern about the lame duck session of Congress and this fiscal cliff. How many of you have heard about it? The sequestration issues that have been going on with regards to how we actually reduce the federal budget. It's actually expected to go into effect. Nothing is done at the end of this year. And there will be across-the-board cuts. And there is a lot of concern that the prevention funds will be threatened. So with that, we have also seen a lot of state and local action. The National Conference of State Legislatures every year puts out a report about what kinds of healthy eating, active living policies have passed in states across the country. This was the last year's snapshot. And so as you can see, many states were active in this last year with policy. That we found that they're using actually multiple policy approaches to address childhood obesity, everything from physical education and activity to pricing strategies to the built environment, nutrition, food marketing to children. We are actually seeing multiple approaches to obesity prevention. And at the local and state level, these approaches also include improving access to healthy foods, promoting local foods and direct food marketing. School nutrition, of course, has been a priority, and then farm-to-school programs has also been a priority. Just this last week, we found out that Baltimore School District, that Baltimore City Schools actually acquired a 33-acre farm, and they're instituting a program where they're teaching, where they're teaching the kids to be basically urban farmers and gardeners, and they're teaching them about the soil and how to actually till the land while also looking at healthy foods. So with that, it also includes built environment. So certainly cycling, walking, transit-oriented development, school siding, pedestrian-friendly roadways. On the physical activity side, the collection of BMI data, joint use agreements is a big deal. We've seen a lot of action around that. In school physical activity requirements, some movement on PE, but a lot of movement on these programs like Take 10, where they integrate like 10 minutes of physical activity in classes throughout the day. Pricing strategies, incentives for healthy foods, disincentives on taxes for sugar-sweetened beverages, incentives for active transit, and then food marketing to children. So limiting access or limiting marketing of unhealthy foods to kids in or near schools. And on the pricing strategies, as you all well know, right across the bay, Richmond, California, and of course El Monte, California, are looking at forms of sugar-sweetened beverage taxes. New York City, as you well know, has recently publicized their pass there, and it was an administrative action, it was not a legislative action, to actually limit the beverage size of sugar-sweetened beverages. On the built environment, complete streets is still in vogue, and we're seeing more and more of those passed. Joint use agreements, as I mentioned, have been really big for additional states that have laws pending in 2012. And then in terms of safe routes to school, we saw that the funding for it has increased from approximately, or the number of schools who are using this funding has increased from approximately 7,600 to more than 11,000. In Alameda County, California, they passed a transportation sales tax measure to fund safe routes to schools programs. And then, of course, we've seen the continuance of schools that have been active in getting U.S. Healthier School recognition. And mayors and governors have also been very active, Carl Dean in Nashville, Governor Nathan Deal in Georgia. And then, of course, we've seen Philadelphia with Mayor Nutter. New York City, Mississippi, and California have also been leaders overall. So with that, we've seen best practices in action. In Nashville, Mayor Carl Dean is one of them. Their Metro Public Health Department has launched this Nashville Hills. They received stimulus money in order to make this happen, and they've done a great job and gotten a lot of national attention. So a part of their efforts have included their Share the Road campaign to promote safe use of roads by cyclists and motorists. And this is critical and key. I actually live in Washington, D.C., and they've expanded bike lanes without ever telling the drivers that, you know, there are going to be more bikers on the road. And really, there's been no kind of coordinated effort to kind of educate drivers or educate cyclists about what to work out, look out for, and how you actually share the road. So Nashville has pioneered this Share the Road campaign, which I think we're going to see more expansion across the country as we see more cycling or more lanes introduced in terms of complete streets. Gold Sneaker, they've introduced that integrates physical activity and healthy eating into Head Start classrooms. So building lifelong skills for healthy living among young children. The Green Bikes Initiative, their bike sharing program, this is another popular thing we've seen in cities across the country. The Community Intergenerational Urban Gardens Program, which allows older generations to teach younger generations about how to grow healthy foods. And then Healthy Corner Markets, as you all well know. These initiatives, some of these were pioneered by New York City and almost a decade ago, and now states and other cities across the country are taking it up. And then, of course, the city is planning a media campaign that will promote sustained involvement in HEAL policies. And then, of course, they also funded full-time jobs and part-time jobs as part of their CPPW grant. In San Diego, the city of San Diego has their childhood obesity initiative, which, of course, was also a part of the stimulus funding. And their best practices include everything from a public health stakeholders group to developing a healthy communities atlas that maps existing data on social and physical determinants of health. They've developed a regional Safe Routes to School strategic plan to guide future plans for promoting walking and biking to school. And then they have also expanded their Bike to Work Day to include the entire month of May. And they've also implemented a Walk, Ride, and Roll to School campaign in 22 schools across the country. So what we've noticed overall is that there are some elements to successful childhood obesity prevention initiatives, like prioritizing policy change over program implementation. And some of this, of course, is an artifact of how the funding has come out of the federal level, right? The CDC grants actually, CPPW and otherwise actually, and CTG require policy change. And so we've seen that prioritized by cities and states across the country. Emphasizing change in policy as well as the policy environment to have a maximum sustainable impact. So knowing that, you know, there are ways to actually influence the advancement of policy by influencing how people think about policy solutions, and that means engaging media, it means engaging populations, it means educating folks about how policy can be a lever for change. Developing high-leverage, community-wide, multi-level strategies designed to affect policy systems and environmental change within government, school, work sites, communities, and places of worship. That's just long for collaboration. Public-private collaboration is an important element, we think, of successful childhood obesity prevention strategies based on what we've observed. And, of course, a focus on vulnerable populations. Now, this is a challenge because even as we're starting to see in some of the lead cities where policy interventions were done early, even as we're starting to see a decline in childhood obesity rates, in some of these cities we're actually seeing the young people of color not declining. So really the decline affecting the white population but not children of color. And so that's good programs really have a targeted approach with regards to that. Featuring strong, committed leadership among department heads, executives, et cetera, and displaying a commitment to evaluation reporting and data-driven decision-making. So, you know, actually building in evaluation as a part of what you do so that you can improve program performance, but also know what your outcomes are. And then, of course, using creative funds, creating funding sources and making healthy communities an attractive proposition. So they also include interventions that work on all levels. So at the state level, optimizing, if you look at this, you're looking across their state and school levels, local and county. At the local county level, optimizing the use of parks and rec, establishing partnerships with schools, reshaping the physical environment, and addressing financial constraints placed on schools have been cross-sector interventions that work on all levels. State level, reaching high-risk populations, promoting access to nutritious foods, coordinating systems and services. And at the school level, addressing the obesity issue at all grade levels and ages, optimizing out-of-school time, enfolding into existing curricula or school models, like I mentioned, the Take 10 program, and then standards-based interventions. And then finally, coordination, successful prevention collaborations consist of course, coordination, interagency and non-agency collaboration, innovative and supportive partnerships, and gathering and incorporating experts from other departments or branches, and then extensive community involvement. Finally, I would like to refer you to our Leadership for Healthy Communities Action Strategies Toolkit. We use this whenever we have policymakers or staff, their staff who are looking to, or they want to get involved in this and they don't know where to start. We've done an extensive toolkit that provides all of the major options for healthy eating and active living and many of the mechanisms, policy mechanisms for making change at the local level. It includes examples of where this has been done across the country, resources, etc. And so we invite you to visit it so that you can learn more or use it in your own communities. And with that, thank you. Mm-hmm.